Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
10:19, this is Dean Richards. Today, following the events on the invasion of Ukraine, the latest this morning, it appears as though talks will take place on the Belarus border between Russia and Ukraine. At the same time, President Putin there places their nuclear forces on alert. What does that all mean? Joining us is Professor Richard Farkas, Professor of Political Science, DePaul University, an expert on Central and Eastern European politics, on Russia, the Ukraine, and the conflicts and post-conflicts in that region. Professor Farkas, thank you for joining us, and nice to have you with us this morning.
Happy to try to help, Dean.
So what do you make of the latest now, the possibility of some talks taking place? Is this just being staged for show? Is it a sign of weakness on one side or the other? Is it a sign of anger on one side or the other, especially when, you know, the N-word is injected into any conversation?
Yeah, quite. Well, I think there's always a hazard in trying to read the what I'd call the wrinkles in the way these things evolve. I think there may be multiple actors operating at different levels, but I wouldn't put much credibility in it. The most impressive speech that Zelensky just made to the Russian people, a rather lengthy speech, a very personal, I think, penetrating appeal, made the point that he was having no success getting a response from the higher leadership in Moscow to have a dialogue. So at least in his case, he's not optimistic
that the talks will even take place in the first place.
Right, right. Or at least among people who are at a level where it would make a difference.
Yeah, very interesting. Because this is what we've heard. The latest that is coming, let me see here, this appears to be from the Associated Press, that Zelensky agreed on Sunday to talks with Russia without preconditions, even as Vladimir Putin further escalated tensions by placing nuclear forces on alert.
Yeah, that's my impression, too, that Zelensky has found some latitude to try to take the high road. But the bottom line is he's not getting much response.
What's your assessment of the events of the week? You know, everybody is talking how they're surprised that the Ukrainian forces and people have been able to put up a resistance.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised at all about that. I spent some time on a State Department project in November and December. And when I was there, there was a survey done that suggested that 70% of the male population was prepared to fight. Now, of course, that's just a survey, but it indicated a pretty deep-seated sense of violation or potential violation, and they're going to close ranks. And I think that is happening. The really distressing part is that I think history, whether short-term or long-term, is going to ultimately say that the decision that Putin made was singularly irrational. That is to say, it doesn't look like it was built on a thoroughgoing calculation about the costs and payoffs. There are a number of things that seem not to have been in the formula by which he made that decision. Perhaps the most dramatic is that he, even if he's militarily successful, he's going to face a perhaps generation-long insurgency. And you'll notice recently Germany and the United States started to supply the kinds of weaponry that would make that insurgency, that long-term insurgency, extremely uncomfortable for a country like any occupying country, but particularly the Russians. One of the interesting things, Dean, is that the Russian military has shown no capacity to deal with an ununiformed adversary. In other words, in Chechnya or in Syria or Afghanistan or wherever you choose, they, like most major powers, have found it too difficult or very perplexing to try to deal with an enemy that you can't identify easily. So I think that's one of the major miscalculations that's taken place, not to mention the heinous nature of what they're doing and the overwhelmingly negative world response.
Is there a chance that even with the iron fist with which Vladimir Putin rules the Russian Federation, that this could begin a weakening of his power and possible ouster?
Yeah.
with the protests that we're seeing taking place within Russia and this insurgency that you're talking about and missions not going as planned by him?
Yeah, actually, I think it's a real, very real option. But I would suggest to you that you caution yourself about the iron fist notion, because in the last and you know, people like myself focus on this day in, day out, week in, week out, and year in and year out. And the bottom line is that that Putin, strangely enough, has loosened some of the controls in the system at large. And now I think he's going to pay the price, because there are groups that are taking up the mantle of exercising and participating and protesting and forming opposition. So I think your point that his popularity will erode is partly a function of the fact that he loosened up on the system a little bit over the last, let's say, 5 years.
Hmm. Very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how that shakes out. One of the other things that I've found very interesting to observe is the unified response by NATO and most all of the world to what is happening. The interesting part, though, is normally during times like this, where the United States has been involved in something like this, the response from our own country's leaders are unified, and that is not the case this time.
Yeah, well, that's right on target. And that I hope it doesn't sound too partisan, but I attribute that to the posturing that Donald Trump has sort of the stamp that he's put on our partisan politics, not singularly, of course, but the division is now such that a position that one group takes is necessarily 180 degrees from the other position. We've got that problem. I don't think that America is going to close ranks. There's some very disturbing surveys done here in the United States in the last couple of days about the lack of support for supporting Ukraine, and that's very troubling. But on the NATO point that you make, you know, I think very astute analysts have said Putin has done exactly what he didn't want to have happen.
Strengthened NATO, yeah.
His actions have solidified NATO,
yeah,
to the point where the Italian and the German and the British and all the other systems, even the minor ones, have decided that this is far beyond the pale, it's over the line, and it's unacceptable by any standard on any rationale.
What about the response of civilians in the Ukraine? You know, with the one of the stories that came out this week, the call went out for people to make Molotov cocktails too.
Right.
Throws us back to World War II. You know, World War I, World War II, where there was that kind of resistance, something that you had never thought that you would see in the year 2022.
Yeah, that's exactly on target. Now, I think that's the most penetrating, dramatic thing about all of this. You know, when somebody wants just a single sentence, I would say that what Putin has done is turned the political and diplomatic and international clock back 75 years to a point where we thought we had moved beyond the inability. Back in the Cold War, there was an inability to accept norms and institutions and dialogue. And now I think we're instantly back in that kind of a mode. I think the last 75 years has incrementally made it possible for us, or I would have argued, made it possible for us to dialogue about the most serious issues to avoid the use of massively destructive weapons.
Yeah. Well, you would think that we would be at a point now where there would never be an unprovoked invasion of another country.
Precisely.
You know, that's part of the mind-blowing part of this to me, that that throws you back to World War II.
Yes, and frankly, you know, I've had the opportunity over the last couple of days to deal with my colleagues in South Africa, in Georgia, in Ukraine, in Croatia, and other places. We all share this sense, and it's remarkable, without scripting it, everybody that I know that operates with these issues in focus says they're sad, they're angry, and they feel impotent. Helpless.
Where do you think China will fall in all of this in terms of response?
Yeah, I think they're going to do a little tight roping. The bottom line is that they don't like to appear to be in the mainstream of Western thinking about these things. But in the end, I think they're not going to be on the Russian side. It's perhaps useful to remember that the Chinese and the Russians have border disputes for substantial pieces of territory in the Far East. And I can imagine the Chinese sitting back and saying, well, the Russian action in Ukraine proves that they don't respect the established sovereign boundaries. There's therefore no need for us to assume that on that principle that we need to respect those sovereign boundaries, especially with the Russians. So I think there's a long-term erosion that's going to take place. And over time, I think we'll hear more and more about conflict between the Chinese and the Russians in a limited territorial way in the Far East.
Very, very interesting. We really appreciate your perspectives on this. Professor Richard Farkas with DePaul University, thank you so much and have a great day today.